parenting. I wanted to point out the first class, what I afterwards in reviewing it, the part that I happened to like the most, when Shula asked that question, and I thought that was a good illustration. It was at the end. And I think that was an illustration of the point that I was making, is that you have to develop the habit of studying the situation and not having impulsive answers. Because she raised a particular question, everybody knew, everybody had an immediate answer. And I can understand them, not that they weren't, but I was like troubled and I was trying to think and trying to understand it. And I mean, sometimes it's lucky I just hit on something. And I was searching for the underlying cause to the best of my ability. If we can understand the cause of a certain behavior, so then it's not that's not the issue. The particular behavior is no longer, that's just a symptom. And you can deal with it in a better fashion. So tonight we're taking up the next issue. The title is, Should Parents Also Be Friends? And the issue of discipline. Okay. Well, my opinion, no. The parent is not a friend. That's not the job. Being a parent is a job. And I think it's very important. It sounds like an obvious thing. Maybe most people would agree. But emotionally speaking, I think a lot of people have this attitude. And I'll keep emphasizing this point. The more you know about yourself, the more you understand your own motives, you're not to feel guilty about that. It's natural. Very often, a parent wants to be a friend because you want to be the good person and you want your child to like you and you feel that you ought to be a friend. Ultimately, if you raise the child properly, I think that the friendship element can come into play with adult. It's a different situation. There's the adult parent-child relationship, and very often that can develop into something. It's still, I don't think it ever is a complete friendship, because it's a parent. It always has to be, that element of a parent will always be there. It can't be like a complete friendship, but it can be a friendly type of a relationship. A parent can be friendly to the child. I'm using the analogy, for example, of a coach. Okay? A coach is not a friend. Coach is a job. He's got certain things that he has to achieve, certain objectives that must be achieved. In the course of doing it, he can, if the situation permits it, he can be a nice coach, he can be a friendly coach, the kind of coach that people like, or maybe they don't like him so much, but he's ineffective. The main thing is you have to realize that it's a job. You have to approach it from that standpoint. Very often there's a syndrome. See if this strikes home on any level. I could tell, if you understand the psychology, you can see that the parenting, the way the parent is relating to the child, it's not a realistic situation, but the parent is trying to recreate something which they didn't have. That is to say that they didn't have the kind of childhood that they wanted. They didn't get they didn't have the type of love, at least in their memory, that they wanted, and they're determined to right that wrong, and they will gear the relationship. They're going to be in the relationship, they're trying to strive to be the ideal parent that they wanted to have when they were children but didn't have. That might not be a bad thing, but they're trying to do that, in which case they are then, psychologically, they identify with the child. So every time they're treating the child in a certain way, they're getting the enjoyment of being the good parent, but they're also identifying with the child and receiving the kind of treatment that they wanted to receive as a child and didn't receive. You understand what I'm saying? It's a double whammy, if you will. Now, that doesn't sound so terrible because, look, I want to look, isn't that great? I want to be a great parent. And at the same time, I want to retrieve. I am actually retrieving the kind of love that I didn't have. That's not a good thing. It's not a good thing because, again, you're not being objective. You're not acting in accordance. You're acting in accordance with a hidden program. So you will do those things you're impelled to do, because that's the program you want to achieve. That may or may not be what's in the best interest of the child. You really have to try all the time to do what's in the best interest of the child. You've got to be detached. To have that kind of a psychological connection to the child could be a harmful thing, as you see. It could be a harmful thing. So the more you're able to detach yourself. Like sometimes a doctor has to detach themselves from the patient. If you're just going to be governed by that need, to make the patient feel good, that can interfere with your task. And that's the same is true. You have to develop a certain type of a detachment from the child, study the child, get to know the child is not you. We're not trying to recreate you. That's not the objective. So that you should have the opportunity to have that type of childhood which you didn't have. That's gone. Try to have a good adulthood. If you didn't have a good childhood, that's gone. You'll be the real reward is in the long run, when you can sit back and observe and the child grows. The real objective is to allow the child to develop its own unique personality. Shouldn't have an agenda in that sense. Should not have an agenda. You should facilitate the positive development of the child. The child is not an extension of the parent. There are some elements of the parent, hopefully the good ones, but you want to facilitate. You want to act in accordance with the best interests of the child. These things are extremely important. Again, I'll keep saying that again and again. The better person that you become, the more you become a better person, and a thoughtful person, a rational person, that will, the more you get rid of, as we said last week, the less mishigasim, the more you get rid of your own baggage, it won't be transferred, because it's just inevitable. We have, you know, baggage, everybody has baggage, and a certain amount is going to be transferred, but the objective is to try and reduce that. So, I mean, again, I keep saying, I mean, as you become better people, as you restrain yourself, you gain control over your emotions, less anger, less irrationality in your life. Now, tonight we're going to focus a little bit on the subject of discipline. That was, I think, the main theme. And I'll just give some points, some pointers, and then I'll open it up for questions. Discipline is extremely important. That goes without saying. You can't just allow a child to grow and you know, in a natural kind of thing and just be whatever it wants to be. That's an impossibility. Every person needs discipline in order to restrain, I would say three levels, in order to restrain their own impulses. The ability, that's a tremendous, tremendous capability. Of course, you have to be in line with the ability of the child at the time. You know, there's when they're infants, then when they're little toddlers, then when they get older. But that is the most important thing that you're giving to the child. The ability to develop the control over its nature, over its instincts, over its appetites. So in terms of itself, it's very, very vital. And in terms of its ability to relate to others, the social contract, because the child is not going to live in isolation. So it's aside from personally, its own personal growth and development, it has to have the capability of interacting with other people. So that's the social part of it. And then I'd say the third part is the ability to deal with authority. Now, the Torah does give the parent a tremendous amount of authority. The laws pertaining to the mitzvah of kibud av v'em are very, very stringent, very demanding, because that's the parent is a representative of God and so on and so forth. And the Torah that points out the reward. Parents shouldn't abuse it, though. Be very, very careful about that. That honor your father and mother, the mitzvah to honor one's parents, and to fear one's parents, in order that you'll have a long life. So you see that ability for a person to recognize authority and to be able to relate in a respectful manner is very, very important. And the laws are very, very demanding. But bear in mind also, the Torah gave the parents permission to forgive, to be mochel the kavod. So you have to use your intelligence. You have to use your intelligence with these kind of things. Now, one of the things that I underline, he says, if parents wish to enjoy the happiness of righteous and wise children, they have to earn it. They will have to begin by influencing their child at an early age. They will have to be firm in their resolution to make his spiritual and moral development their prime concern. That is really the most important thing. I know parents are very concerned about the best education and all the learning, but he's talking about there's a foundation. Before all that learning will be useful only if there's a foundation of a child who has the proper virtues, to instill a certain control, to instill a certain kindness. That's what he's really, really emphasizing, especially in the early, what we call the midos. Now that's very, very important. I mean, a lot of the yeshivos, some of the yeshivos emphasize how terrific the learning and the advancement and parents gravitate towards that. But then the question is, what about the midos, the behaviors? How do they treat each other? How do the children treat each other? That's extremely, extremely important, especially because we, as much as we extol learning and knowledge in Judaism, But the great person is not just the one who's accumulated a great deal of learning, but does not behave in a proper way, does not live in accordance with his knowledge. The knowledge is important, so the person should exemplify the ideals. So it's a combination. But in the time, in the earliest years, you're paving the ground. It's very, very important to be able to convey the proper virtues. That's what Rabbi Hirsch is saying. I couldn't agree with it more. And then the learning, provided that the proper moral disposition is there, then the learning comes and it reinforces it and they grow. The person grows in his knowledge and in his behavior. But if that proper foundation is not there, then a lot of that learning will be used, you know, to lord it over others, to ego, to brag, you know, the competitiveness, that kind of thing. So we're very, very concerned, and the yeshivos as well should be very concerned about how the kids are behaving and how they're treating each other and things of that sort. That's very, very important. It is no coincidence that after the verse at the beginning of this chapter, which says, a wise son gladdens the father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. He goes into the whole thing, the mother and father. I'm not going to go into that now. I recommend you can pick this up. This conveys to parents, if you wish to see joy from your children, now this is a very, very powerful point over here. If you wish to see joy from your children, do not let their material wealth be your primary concern. Materialism. Parents like to show their love by giving and giving and gifts and materialism. That's another very, very important thing. The worst thing you could probably do to a child is spoiling the child. That's something you have to really be guarded to the best of your ability. To the best of our ability, not to spoil the child. But here he's not making the point about spoiling. He talks about that later. But again, I think, see, parents have this idea that we should give them things and getting them things. That's such a challenge for us today. I think that every generation has its challenges. Because when we were younger and our parents were younger, they had much, much less. There's been such an explosion of things. It's not like every generation says the same thing. You know, it's not true. There's a quantum leap from the way things were when I grew up and the kind of things that were available. I mean, if a family had one television set, my God, there was one television set, and you had to, every time you changed, you had to fix the antenna. And it was black and white. We couldn't even see anything in color. That was such privation. And you couldn't just, you had to go over and change the channel. And there were 15 people because everybody would, and you had to please everybody because everybody didn't have their own. Today, each kid has his own thing, and you know, it's like clicking and this and that, and you could have 14 screens. And on the iPod, there's so much out there, and the ability, now, how do you not spoil a child? There's so much stuff. It's completely different. It's not just a slight, you know, the generation. So our grandparents had less than our parents. But the difference between the grandparents and the parents wasn't that much. They didn't have that much. So you had to go out and play ball, whatever. Yeah, you had to do things to keep busy. You couldn't just sit around and all this entertainment and all this stuff. Kids today with cell phones and everything, I mean, it's a problem. There's just a superabundance of materialism. And how do you avoid, how do you avoid spoiling a child? These are big problems. Okay, these are big problems. We can't solve all these problems tonight, but it's good to have a sense of perspective. He's writing this in the 1800s, and he's warning parents not to think that it's just about material. What did they have in those days, right? What did they have? You know, a horse and wagon? I mean, what are you what are you going to do? Life was a lot tougher, but a lot easier. When people lived on a farm and you had no choice, you had to have a job, you had to help the family at an early age, you learned discipline. There was no choice. Today we have too much all this choice. But again, that we can't tolerate that the child doesn't have, because that's us. We identify with the child. It's a very selfish thing. We've got to give the child because we can't tolerate that the child will be in pain. Okay? But that's not altruistic. It's you. It's that emotion, because you see yourself in that child. And you can't tolerate being in pain. Yes, Ilana? Can I just finish Rabbi Hirsch on this point, okay? Because it's really beautiful what he says. If you wish to see joy from your children, do not let their material wealth be your primary concern. First of all, make sure that they become upright, God-fearing, Torah-observing men and women. For this is the basis of their future well-being and their protection from ruin. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. fools despise both wisdom and discipline. This we read among the opening proverbs in the book of Mishlei. This is something everybody should have on their wall and keep referring to it. This is the real objective, to instill in them the virtues of fear of God and love of fellow man. Everything else will follow, but we don't have that perspective. If the emphasis is on the things and materialism, he's warning us that's not the right way to go. Ilana?
What about relative giving?
Yeah, that's a very good question. A parent has the responsibility. This is your job. You're raising the child. And you have to, and if you have a problem, see, again, if you're raising your child properly, again, it's not a perfect science. So comes Hanukkah and the grandparents come and they give them, it's not going to, that's not going to spoil the whole thing. Don't get carried away. Another thing also, give up this notion of perfectionism. Be realistic, okay? You can't be perfect. I know a lot of parents, once they start to think this way, they read the books and then they drive themselves crazy. That's your mission, guys. Don't be a perfectionist. We'll talk about this. That's an excellent question. When you make rules, for example, there must be rules. Okay, you can't allow the child to just do whatever it wants to do. If you take this, if you handle it correctly, early on, the child is geared towards accepting authority. It's not that there's anything wrong with the child. It's the fact that you spoiled the child because you hesitate. You don't want to be an authority. If you have a problem with authority, and when you were a child, you couldn't stand authority, so it bothers you to be the authority, you've got the problem. You may have a problem with being an authority, with playing that role. And you just want to be a nice person. You want to be a friend. And you want your child to do something. It's not going to work. I mean, aside from being a parent, I've been a teacher for many, many years. And I've taught on every possible level. I taught in Talmud Torah when I first started. I was still going to yeshiva, to make some money to work my way through. I taught in the elementary school yeshivas, high schools. I taught the toughest types of kids. I mean, really, really gangsters. They should have been locked up. Somehow or other, in my early years, I'd get, because I had whatever job I could get. So in the middle of the year, 14 teachers were these kids, that couldn't take the. I finally got it. It fell to my lap. Every teacher that tried couldn't last. The kids knocked them out. I never gave up, and every situation I conquered. And I advised teachers. I mean, since that time, thank God, I've taught post-collegiate and adults. I mean, and all that. I've taught a couple of high school classes in the last 10 years with Rambam Masifta, whatever, from time to time. But I advise teachers. Teachers always go into a situation with one mistake. They always go in. They want to be nice. They want to shine nice. They outplay. That is the biggest mistake you can make. You can't go in there as Mr. Nice Guy because it works on all levels. It's like even with Israel, you can't be nice in certain situations because kids are just waiting. They interpret that as weakness. They can see through you right away. That's absolute weakness, and they will take advantage. So you go in there, you've got to be the disciplinarian. If things go well and you gain control, then the purpose is not to be cruel. You want to be, but being nice is not by being weak and letting them get away with anything. It's by controlling the situation and educating them and helping them. That's the way to be nice. So it's very, very important to know, if you have that problem, you have that weakness, you have to know it within yourself. There's many people that simply can't tolerate the idea of being an authority. But that is the job. You've got to overcome that emotion, and you have to be the authority and the discipline. And if you set it up straight, the child will be testing you. That's another thing. I'll get to the question. Let me just make a few points, then I'm sure there'll be questions over here. It's very, very important to set down the parameters, the rules. I mean, I can't give you what the rules are. For younger kids, it keeps changing, obviously, as the kid gets older. But what you need to establish is that you're the authority. That can't be questioned. So that you're not always yelling. If you find yourself, every time you say something, you have to scream 14 times that you have to go to bed, and you have to scream 14 times you have to brush your teeth, there's a problem. It shouldn't be something that every day you're screaming the same thing. That means the kid does not take you seriously. And you're just going, and if parents say, one more time, if you do that one more time thing, you failed. You failed. They're winning. They're strong. They're winning. It's a war. These kids are warriors. You need a tough general out there. You've got to, and that's why in the early years, if you're always giving in, this and that, and then you're giving in, the kids know it. They're smiling inwardly. They've got it, you know. They know it. And it should be, but if they will test your authority, if you're firm, eventually that's it. They'll accept your authority, they'll trust you, and they'll know that they have to do it. There's no two ways about it. It's you. It's the weakness of the parent who has a difficulty laying down a law. It also, another problem, let me just state a few more things, then we'll take questions. The rules you make should be rational. Okay? That's another thing. People mishigas, if it's a crazy rule, it's not, the kids are going to rebel, and you're going to feel guilty, and then you're going to give in, and then you're going to, or, you know, or you're going to go to an extreme. Think things through in advance. What makes sense? I mentioned this last week. We have a lot of things we've received from our parents. Some of them make sense, some of them don't. They're outmoded. I don't know, I'm just giving an example because I don't know what it is, but I remember when I was a kid, if you ate lunch, you couldn't go swimming for how long?
8 minutes.
Right? For an hour. Why? Nobody knows. The truth of the matter is, you can be swimming. If you're hungry, you have a sandwich and keep going. These swimmers, these marathon swimmers, they have to eat. Right? They keep going. But everybody knows that. That was the rule. God forbid you couldn't question it. Why? Because that's it. You're going to fall. The sandwich, you'll sink. That was it. Or you'll get a cramp. You get a cramp, and that's the end of the story. So these are the rules. Now, you know, kids do some thinking also. They look at the, unfortunately, you know, I got these parents. But seriously, and they're not going to keep it. They're going to test it because reality will set it, and they'll discover that there's no basis whatsoever. I'm just using that as an example. But give a lot of thought to the matter. Think it over. A lot of the rules are irrational. They don't make any sense, and they lead to big problems because the kid keeps rebelling again. No one else is doing this. Now what? And you feel insecure, so you get angry at the kid. It's a good thing because once you make the rules, you should stick to them. Okay? So make rules that you're going to stick to. The kids will test the rule. As a teacher, I knew whatever rule I made, it doesn't take long. One kid, they're going to push. The job of a parent is to make rules. The job of a kid is to break the rules. That's his job. That is his job. He's going to test. And you're all a bunch of weaklings, so you're going to give in. Because you're weak. You've got to become strong in that area. You will not be strong if you're not confident about the rule itself. If you yourself don't even know why, and why, Dad, why? What's the reason? And you have no, because I said so. That's a great reason for doing things. That's really training the kid to, you know, to use logic and reason in his life, because I said so. But let me add another point or two. This goes without saying, I'm sure. I'm sure you all will agree with me, but most of the things I'm saying are easy to understand. It's the implementation that's difficult. It's very, very important for parents, both parents, to be together on the rules. So you should be together on the rules, and that's not always the case, because this is the way the child is going to work. He's going to take you apart, divide and conquer. He's going to divide and conquer. He knows the weak one. He knows the strong one. Okay. So, mommy, you know, daddy said, and what? Dad, you know, and he'll tell right away. He can tell right away. If mommy thinks that daddy's a little ridiculous, you know, then that you've got to be, or vice versa. Vice versa. The strength that in unity, there is strength. And parents are so weak that they can use all the help they can get. You know, like you gotta be together on that. And you can't have people undermining the rules. I mean, grandparents, whatever, you know, like if I have to be there, you know. Grandparents, also, they want to, you know, everybody wants to indulge themselves. No, people want to indulge themselves at the expense of the child or the parents. It's not right. If you're together, see, what the kid is going to do, he's going to go to the weak parent, the weak link, and try and break you down. And that's very bad. Don't put the other people, see, there's two problems. When you make up a crazy rule, the kid runs to the other one. If the father makes a crazy rule, so he's going to run to the mother. In this case, the mother is sane, irrational, whatever. Now, if that's the case, you're putting the mother in a tough position because, you know, she doesn't want to go alone. It doesn't make any sense. But she has no choice, because if she doesn't go along with it, she's going to undermine the authority of the father, and vice versa. You should not undermine each other's authority. You've got to stick together. If you stick together, that's it. He's got no place to go. You got him. You're a wall. You've got to work together as a team. So therefore, communicate. Before you set up the rules, you've got to be together. Anticipate the situation. If it's going on a trip, whatever it is, it's instead of every year yelling, do a little anticipation. You've been on these things before. You know how they behave. You know what's going to come up. So come up with a plan in advance. This is the rule. Okay? Whatever it is. You know, we're going to stop XL ice cream. Whatever the situation is, try to come up. You've got to get a jump on the enemy. You got to... because they're smarter than you. You know, they're really and they have all their energy in this thing. They have nothing else to do. They're in the car. You guys are trying to have a life. This is their life, you know. You know. So those are some of the, if you're firm, if you're consistent. Here's another thing. Another thing that's very important. If you don't have the ability to see your child in pain, you know, then get out of it. That's it. Don't be a parent. A doctor has to have the capability. If the doctor can only give treatments that are pleasurable, he's not a doctor. There will be pain. It's not a bad thing. Pain will not... within reason, I'm talking about. I mean, within reason. The child is being deprived of something it wants. It's for good reason. For good reason, the child is going to cry. The child is going to cry. And that is a test. Now again, you should not deprive the child. Rabbi Hirsch makes this point. Don't deprive the child of legitimate pleasures. You have to function with seichel. Let me just read some more of Rabbi Hirsch to give you. Everybody has to have. Basically, this requires calmness. And, well, he talks about discipline. Let's leave that for a second. Educating a child is not an easy task. Okay, so let's all feel better. He's saying it's not an easy task. And often a great deal of patience and constant serious application is needed in order to succeed. That's constancy is very important. Constancy, as long as you're steady and constant, eventually you'll, because the child will realize he has to go along with you. You have the power. If you have the psychological ability to utilize it, you have to be constant. It's got to be steady. It shouldn't be one day this way, one day that way. You should have a steady system. And often a great deal of patience and constant serious application is needed in order to succeed. The success, however, the Proverbs assure us, will not fail to come. So the Torah is guaranteeing if you follow these prescriptions, you will definitely be successful. And if the task was hard, the knowledge that one has given his child a sound upbringing is even more gratifying. Our Proverbs give us two counsels. Never give up hope. Never stop the task of educating. Thinking that in any case it won't help anymore. That's I know a lot of parents have despaired. That's it. And they think they just messed up the kids. They failed. It's not the case. At any point in time, God factored in all the mistakes we're going to make. It's not a perfect, so God factored it in, and the child has tremendous resilience. So at any point in time, even if you've spoiled the child or you've done the wrong, you're deprived, if you start to move in the right direction, the ability to cure, to change, and to grow is tremendous. So a person should never despair and say, that's it, it's a waste of time. I'll start out again with the next kid. Don't take that attitude. Try over again. Listen to what he says. Never give up hope. Never stop the task of educating, thinking that in any case it won't help anymore. And never let your child obtain anything by sobbing. Did you hear what he just said? Never let your child obtain anything by sobbing. That's a very important point. They play on you and they cry and this and that, and you wear down and you give in. You have to consider how serious that is. But listen to what he says. Whatever you can permit your child, allow him to have it. Don't be stingy. If it's a reasonable thing, allow him to have it. And don't say no too quickly when it is not necessary. However, once you have said no, don't let yourself be persuaded by tearful crying to change your mind. The first skill to be mastered by a mother, he talks a lot about the mother, The first skill to be mastered by a mother who means to bring up her children properly is to be able to bear a child's screaming. So these are some of the very, very important points. That's a tough one. I mean, we've all been there. We all know how difficult that is. But you've got to work on that. And you know that there's tremendous consequences. Parents who cannot bear it and they constantly give in, this and that, the child is learning that it will get whatever it wants just by, you know, playing upon your emotions. Hold on, I want to get back to Ilana because she had the first question. So now I'm good. Ilana, you're asking about what? How do you deal with pesky pesky parents and
just kind of
give
gifts all
the time. If it's here's what I, look, you have to factor it in. There are certain times when it's again, use chachma, use seichel. Don't be afraid. If you have questions, you can call. You don't have to discuss with me. Anyone you discuss with, I'm not. But you can always, these things, we're not just going to master the art by this session or another session. I'm giving certain ideas you're going to have to work on and think on. If questions arise, give me a call or anyone. It doesn't have to be me, someone that you trust. There is such a thing as gifts. It's not the way, obviously, it's too loud. The way it is today is not the way it was 50 years ago. I mean, the kind of Hanukkah gifts that parents give today. And it's because that's a separate topic, the tremendous influx of the materialism, how to manage it in this society. But there's a rational, I mean, thing. A kid expects a gift when? He expects a gift, I'll tell you, his birthday. He expects a birthday gift. He expects Hanukkah gelt, you know, little chocolate there. Well, who's done that? You know, up the ante. Everything has become so materialistic in Judaism. Today, I've been to engagement parties that would have been like weddings. I've been to Sheva Brachas that have been, I mean, the amount, I don't know if it's out here in New York, people go into Hock to make a wedding or a bar mitzvah. It's insane. You have to have courage and strength to say, I'm not going to follow the crowd. I mean, people have gone bankrupt because of these things. A birthday present makes sense. Hanukkah gift, I guess, but it should be reasonable, hopefully. And then I think at the Yisteel the Afikoman. Yisteel the Afikoman. What else? Anything else? That's reasonable because that's a tradition of stealing the Afikoman. And everybody's going to do it, so he steals it, and he says the four questions, you know, he performs. That sounds okay. And those three, am I missing something?
Graduation.
Okay, because that doesn't happen every day, but today it does. Today you graduate from nursery, you graduate from kindergarten, right? You graduate from junior congregation. Anytime you can use the word graduate, that's a gift. You see how we've become? I'm serious, it's funny, it's a joke, but we're paying everybody off because we've lost the capability. We're like kids. That's what I'm saying. We're trying to relive our youth through the kids. Who gets that kick out of giving the gift? It's the parent that gets the kick. Oh, shopping, this, that. It's your own fantasies that are awakened. I would say those three are a graduation, like a real graduation, like eighth grade or something like that. Now, now, if the grandparents give on the birthday, that's fine. Is it? What are you talking about? Every other day? If you feel it's too much, but you're the parent.
Well,
you can't ask me. You have to trust your instincts. If you feel it's too much, you're the parent. You're the authority. You know your kid. You're the one that's driving. You have to say, whoever it is, to your own parents or to your in-laws, sit down with them and tell them why you think that this is, you want to change. Get together with Oren, though. You got to be with your husband on this. Got to be together. I'm serious about that. See, I can't give a prescription over here because I don't know the kid. Each parent has their own style. You may have a different policy with regard. Well, I'll get to you in a second. You may have this is a good point. You may have a different policy with regard to gifts than I would have. Okay? So you're the parent. You're doing the driving. You got to make the call. There's no book over here that's going to tell you. If you sense, given the way the kid is going, this and that, and so on and so forth, it's just too much. Then you discuss it with your wife. You get together, and we're going to talk to the end. They have to be reasonable. I assume they want the kid to grow in the best possible way. So you have to point out why you would appreciate if they wouldn't do such and such. If they're reasonable people, then they'll cooperate with you. Okay? Nobody can make you. You're the one. It's your kid. You're the one that's going to have to make these choices. Okay. Either Jessica or Farley. Can you guys get together on this?
I was coming to get the same thing earlier. We have a similar situation with a relative who gives gifts a lot.
And what we did one time was actually the relative's idea was we pushed off instead of giving them to the kid when the relative arrived, which has been the past. We did. We thought it was getting a little out of control. We pushed off and said we put the gifts off for a week or something like that. And one here, one there, and had to deal with certain behavior and different things. And it worked out much better than it had previously. And so and the relative was fine with it, and it worked out fine to do that. And I thought that was a much better idea than how we had done it previously.
Well, there are etzos. That's good. That's a good etzos. You could take it, but you're giving it a week later. I don't know if that's really what's going to work for you.
The Highlands actually
connected it with behavioral. In other words, it became a reward for, right. You know, whatever.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. It's not a bad idea, but if you have a serious problem of too many, it's not going to help eventually. You know what I mean? If they're overindulging, anyone who's doing that, you're the parent, you have to protect from that. You don't want your kid to be spoiled. And if there are people in the environment that are doing it, they shouldn't do it. Everybody must respect the authority of the parent. Okay? Everybody. At the end of the day. I told you that story last week about when I used to, with my grandkids, you know, and I used to tell them we're going to take you home, remember, with the JD, and then they thought I was serious. And but, no, but my son said, well, you know, you told us never to lie, blah, blah, blah. I said, you're right. And it was a good lesson to tell you and all that. No, but seriously, I will not violate the will of the parents. I won't do that. That's wrong for grandparents. I mean, grandparents also, they want to indulge. It's very nice. Being a grandparent is great. You get to have all the fun, and the parents have to, that's really getting even, you know. That's when you get even. But seriously, it's not right. It's not right because the parent has a serious job. If the grandparent or whoever it else gets the sense that these are parents that take it seriously, because sometimes the parents give the impression that, you know, it's all hefker, so to speak, it's all loose. When people see that, so, you know, they don't have a sense that they have to worry about the authority of the parent. This is something which is very, very serious. And anyone who's interfering with that, you have to take a stand. You have to tell them in a nice way, because if it's your own parents, you know, you have to be respectful to your parents, but you have to explain. Go ahead, Jessica.
Okay, so we made a rule in our house, but I feel like I'm challenged by the society that we live in. The rule was that I don't really want my son having the DS or the Wii or more things to play games with. Like, he has access to the computer, he can play games on there, but all his friends have it, he phones out different rabbis' families who have it, and he's like, so it's not really a religious thing. He's like, oh, you don't want me to have it because you want me to study more Torah. And I'm like, well, I just think you have enough. You have enough of it. So what I'm trying to understand is, a religious rule, I'm pressured by the society I live in because people around him have it. Am I depriving him? Am I not treating him fairly? Is this a fair rule? You're talking about Hirsch, and we have to be legitimate, real rules. We shouldn't, you know, be unrealistic. And, you know, is it really fair to him? Because a lot of his friends have it. So when he goes to their house and does these things for hours and hours.
So he's doing it anyways.
He's doing it anyways.
Well,
so
then,
he wants his own.
Well, maybe. Well, I mean, then I'd have to analyze.
Again, that's
it's
wants, not needs.
Go ahead. What?
It's wants, not needs. If the child wants, and then if you give in to that want, he's going to want the next thing, and then the next thing, and the
well,
next thing.
Well, there is
the
a
next
problem. Because he's in a culture where he sees something he wants, and he wants something else.
So have him earn it.
Well, we
if
did that.
Like
we said
you
got certain ways
on your phone. Yeah, I'll get it. You have an answer? You want to? By the way, I don't mind. You know, help me out over here. Look, what's you know, I'm serious. Hearing different points of view.
But it was more if my mother had the points and we were able to go shopping with these points. So we bought the Wii. So it didn't cost us anything. My daughter's only allowed to play with it when she has no homework or on Sundays after she's done her workbooks. So she has to complete at least 3 pages in 3 different workbooks before she's even allowed to touch it.
And she can't access it, like, you know.
It's right there in the playroom, which is also my mother's office. So mm-hmm. she knows how to turn it on, she knows how to change the channels to get to the Wii, and she knows how to silence the volume in case my mother's working. She knows how to do everything for it, set herself up, set her little Wii.
You have a kid that's obedient, then. It's following the rules.
But she knows, and she knows that if we caught her, that thing would disappear so fast, too.
David?
What I was going to say was two things. I'm not so interested in what other kids have, because then I'm telling my kids that everything they see in the world, they're entitled to. Mm-hmm. And they have to know that there's differences. There may be things that they get that other people don't, or that people do get. They have to understand wherever they end up in life, that they're going to have to accept what they have and be content with that. So by thinking that they can covet what everyone else has, I don't care what anyone else has. If they happen to get things, then they should be happy about that. And if they don't, they should be happy about it too. The other thing regarding
that's
the behavior is I feel like rewarding a kid for good behavior is wrong. I don't feel a child should be rewarded for, I think that's an obligation they have to reward themselves. And it's something that has to be imparted to them. I don't have to give them a reward. The reward is they're not gonna get punished by me. That's their reward.
Right.
He is, I'm good guy, bad guy.
He happens to be right. Well, you're not on the same page.
Shouldn't you show a child every once in a while, hey, look, I really do appreciate your good behavior this month or this week or something.
Yeah, that. But that, I don't think
simple,
David disagrees with
a
that.
A simple dollar treat, you know, something.
No. That's not what he's saying. The rewards have to be used very, very carefully. They have to be. I'm not saying there's no place for rewards, but the main reward, however, is the approval of the weapons that the child, that the parent rather has, is that the child looks up to the parent. The child doesn't want to get the disapproval of the parent. The child does want to earn the approval. Hopefully, that should be a very strong factor. That the child. He's right. Every time a child goes to school and does a book report, he has to get a reward. What kind of system is that? You're not training the child to develop any. There's no virtue in that. I agree with that.
But the reward is, like you said, the reward is the parents are happy with the child. That's
the happiness.
Say, okay, what you
right, mean. Right, right, right. That is. You shouldn't use excessive. Excessive rewards. It's an ever spiral. Then he gets tired. But aside from that, first of all, it's meaningless after a while. You're gonna have to get bigger and bigger rewards. Secondly, the child is never really developing the ability to do something for its own sake, to enjoy that he did something and he was successful at it. The fact that the child did something and was successful at it. Everything has to be with a payback, with an instant reward, is I agree with that 100%. It should be used, I'm not saying there's no time and place. That's part of the spoiling thing. It should be used sparingly. It's not that it should never be used, but it should be used sparingly, because the child has to know that he has responsibilities and he can't get rewarded for like I said, he can't get rewarded for brushing his teeth. I mean, these are things that he has to do. So that's a very, very, that's an important point. Well taken. Yeah, Baruch?
So I just have a comment, followed by a true, sad story, real fast, and then a question. I know I'm not going to get anything else.
Okay, thanks. Next person.
But, okay, so the comment is, I used to actually be a former public school teacher.
Okay.
In my past life. And what happened was, one of the biggest lessons that I'll never ever forget, of many that I've had, is that, and I taught, you know, 7th and 8th graders in downtown Phoenix, is that from day one you have to be on top of the child. From day one, from the cradle. Because if not, society is going to have to discipline the kids. Like me, or like the cops, or the jail. And I'll illustrate this with a sad true story that happened just last month. A classmate of mine in yeshiva, he played a joke on me when I was in nursery with him. He took a fruit roll-up, he licked the fruit roll-up, and he handed it to me, and he watched me eat it. And afterwards, he told me he licked the fruit roll-up.
Okay.
I found out last month he dropped dead from drugs. He was a troubled kid. He was a dropout. He had a child out of wedlock. This is a Jewish, and he grew up in a Jewish Orthodox community, a heavily Jewish Orthodox community. So the question is, at 4 years old, he was already playing these games. Is it not true, from cradle, a child has to be disciplined from cradle?
Yeah, I've been making that point.
I know, I mean,
I haven't been making that point.
Or, the other question is it destiny? Was that child just going to be off the derech completely? How?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah, look, but let's go with the norm. Baruch's point is correct. You can't account. There's always an aberration that we couldn't control. I'm not saying no, but by and large, by and large, these things, when we're quote unquote off the derech, off the path, you could trace it back to problems in the childhood. That's for sure. This child was acting out in a cruel way, so there must be a reason for it. But this child had a lot of resentments already at that point in time. Did not obviously have a loving, caring type of environment. So I agree with that point. I haven't the question that Jessica asked. These are tough questions. In terms of you have to have an overall policy as to what the child is going to have, what you're going to let them have, and you got to think it through. So if you're not going to give the child this particular, what's going to happen? Are they going to be able to run down the street? And they're going to wind up doing the same thing anyways. So maybe that's not the way to treat this situation. In other words, try to think through the consequences, because if you're going to make the rule, you're going to have to enforce it. And if the purpose is because you don't want him listening to this stuff all the time, but he's going to listen to it anyways, then you got to ask, what did I achieve with the rule? He's going to get it anyways. So maybe you got to structure the rule in a different
very
kind of way.
Very limited when he would get it. He'd go to a friend's house or minimize time.
So you're satisfied that it's achieving its objective. That rule is achieving its objective.
Maybe you have to do other things with his brain.
So it's achieving the objective that you had in mind when you made the rule?
Hopefully I need to work on it more.
Well, then you have to work on it more. Then fine. So let him not be so happy. As long as it has a worthy objective and it's achieving that.
I'm asking you, is that a worthy objective? Should I eliminate some of the games?
I can't go into all the particulars of the games. I have to sit down.
Games,
I, you know.
But should I eliminate some of the gameplay so my child can focus on things more educated and more intellectual? Like, that's what I was raised. So I wanted to give that to him more. It increases vocabulary, it increases reading skills. There's so many things it's writing.
What about games that do that?
Well, then if you can, obviously, if you can provide the alternatives, merely taking away that is not going to achieve your objective. It'll just create a certain resentment. He's got nothing to do with it. So that's a good point you're raising. When you want to reduce the involvement in these distraction kind of things, the things that are not helpful and all of that, bear in mind these consequences. A, will he get that? So let's go to his friend, he'll get the same thing. Or B, if he doesn't, what are you going to provide as the alternative? If you have a worthy, merely taking away is not going to provide that stimulus to develop intellectually as you would like. You got to think about the whole plan. Now, you take away and you can provide alternatives which he'll find enjoyable and they'll be educational, so then you achieve something. But if you just took away, well, okay, maybe you restricted his indulgence, but that's not the full picture. You've got to, where's the positive side? What's my gain? Always ask yourself those questions. Think it down the line. In taking this measure, okay, A, how will I enforce it? Is it enforceable? B, what's the gain? Okay, what's the strategy over here? And then if you do have, you know, things, you go, you spend time with him, that you take him to whatever, I don't know, museum, whatever it is, I'm just making things up, from which you can really, and you stimulate an enjoyment of these things, then you've gained something. He doesn't feel deprived. The other way, he just feels deprived. Everybody else is having fun. I'm just sitting here. What am I doing?
But he's still getting that because his peers are all doing this, and they're all. He sees the things they have. Some of the kids are getting a lot, like way more than.
But if you have a good plan and you're giving him something, eventually he will see what he gained and he'll thank you for it. If that's the way. I don't mean he'll thank you for it, you know, in the near future. When he's about 50 years old, he'll write you a note. You know, when he visits you in the nursing home. And I remember, Mom. It'll happen. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Lisa, I think Lisa was next. Go ahead. And then you're next.
Well, I was just wondering, okay, Mommy, two almost three-year-old kids, when she, like, absolutely refuses to do something that she's required to do, like brush her teeth, or follow a simple command, what do you do?
Ella?
Yeah.
She's tough.
She is tough. And I get tough, then she gets tougher.
So, brushing teeth, I spoke to Rachel about, she wanted to brush teeth. So I told her,
that's a good question. Let's see if we can figure this out.
How
old is she?
How
old is she? She's almost three, though. How old is Ella? Almost three?
She's only three in August.
She realizes this.
But I mean,
three in August. All right, but one thing. Is a kid, I have no idea, is a kid about to be three supposed to be able to brush their teeth every day? Is that?
No, but they brush more than. They can't brush themselves until they get 7 or 8.
So you expect her to brush on her own?
No.
Okay.
But, I mean, if she just, like, throws a fit and, like, a couple of your mouth, Or, okay, take the example of beating up on our sister.
Oh, let's take one thing at a time. Let's take one thing at a time. What's that?
Toothbrush, let her pick out her own toothpaste.
Most of the time, it's no problem. But every once in a while, she has a super mega fit. And then I hold her down and, like, physically. You know, then I wonder, like, is that okay? No, is that okay?
So, but one thing. But basically, hold it a second. Basically, she's brushing her teeth.
Yeah, but it's okay that I, like, Hold this.
This is interesting. So just give me a few seconds over here. So, what would you say? 95% of the time, she.
90-95.
That's not bad. Hold it a second. Here's what I want you to do. There's no way we can answer this question yet. What I want you to do is, and we'll talk about this. I want you to notice those times when she throws the fit. What happened? Anything? Just start. What happened on that morning? What are the circumstances?
She's tired.
Okay. So that's the one. If that's the case, it's not a problem in her ability. It's a different kind of a problem. Kids, how she acts out when she's not getting enough sleep. So you can anticipate that. You understand what I'm saying?
She'll tell me, like, if she does something like hits her sister, and I tell her that's not okay. We talk about it, or whatever. She'll just be like, I'm tired and I'm grumpy.
He's pretty smart. But mothers say the same thing, don't they? Seriously, that is the problem. The problem is, it seems that in general she doesn't do these things. She doesn't beat up her sister.
Maybe we can talk in private later.
Well, we'll talk in private. Okay. But the brushing of the teeth again is directly associated to being in a certain kind of a mood. You could sort of anticipate it already. You know that. You know how your kid is going to behave when she didn't get enough sleep. Each person has to know their own child.
Yeah.
You got to know these things about your own child so you can anticipate for them. If that's the case, you know which morning. I can guarantee you, you'll know that this morning you're going to have to fight her to brush the teeth. It's not that. It's how she behaves when she's exhausted. Hold it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I had a comment on Alana's question about the grandparents. So it's very interesting. My oldest is 8 and a half, and then every 2 years after that, until 2. So I have 4 kids. So my parents and my in-laws...
2 to 8 and a half, right?
2, 4, 6, and 8 and a half.
Okay.
So my grandparents... My parents and my in-laws give my kids a lot more gifts than my husband and I do. And my kids sort of... They see a... In their own minds, there's some sort of separation. They don't expect from us because my parents and my in-laws give. Like, my daughter's had a kindergarten graduation and my parents gave her a present and the rest of my kids a present. Small, but little things. And my mother-in-law sent her a check. But we didn't give her a present, and she didn't want to come and say, how come you didn't give me a present for my graduation? Mm-hmm. And my parents, every time they take my kids to the zoo or Legoland, they always buy them a present in the gift shop. We, 95% of the time, do not.
Okay.
Now my kids might ask, can we have a present in the gift shop? And we say no, and they say, how come? And we say, because we're not doing that today. Okay, they never, ever say, well, Grammy and Poppy do it, why don't you do it?
Okay.
So I'm saying, I don't think that... I mean, we've set guidelines with my parents as to what they can't buy the kids.
Oh, you've set guidelines.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're saying.
Told them you cannot buy them anything related, like any video games, any computer games, any TV, anything. There's definitely guidelines, but certain kinds of books, certain kind of games, what you can't do, and they fully respect that.
Okay.
But I don't think my kids automatically expect from us, or they're spoiled with us because my parents somehow they have this separation in their mind. Like, well, the grandparents do that. These are the little.
If you work together, you can eliminate. It's easy to trace what the problems are. It's hard to say no, not just to your kids, but to parents, or to your in-laws. However it is, by thinking in advance, and that's basically what I was saying, what you did is a good thing. You determine the policy, because you're in charge. This is the area where you're in charge. And it's not your parents, it's not your in-laws. That's not for them to decide. They are not raising this child. Hopefully, they have a lot of good they can offer. Grandparents could be a good thing, could be a blessing, but especially when they babysit. But that's great. No, it's great to have young grandparents because they can babysit. But that's it. They should confine themselves to that. Seriously, you did the right thing. You've got to take a stand, and if it's going to make the parents or the in-laws unhappy, well then. Why would they be unhappy? Are they interested in the best interests of the child, or they just want to indulge themselves? Grandparents are very selfish people. I admit, I pointed it out of myself. Well, I'm aware of it. I won't do it again. You learn from your experiences. Yes, next question.
I was going to say, if it's only 5%...
Good, that's a very good illustration. You won, And nothing, the kid didn't die from the screaming and the not getting it. Eventually they saw reality set in. Because he was strong.
You hear all the things. You hear the people whispering or
talks about the rod, you know, to chastise with a rod. He says, likewise, the word shavit does not always have to remind us literally of a rod. It designates equally any chastisement which is aimed at betterment through suffering, privation, etc. In other words, such dispensation from God as inflicts suffering for the sake of teaching. Accordingly, in Proverbs 2, we are to understand from the word shavit, which is the rod, any influence which makes the child painfully aware of his incorrect behavior. We are not to shirk our duty and avoid exerting of such an influence, for its omission, especially during the early years of childhood, will not fail to take its toll. Yet it does not mean that for this purpose either a rod or a whip is needed. Anything which makes the child painfully realize his misbehavior, such as the denial of a pleasure, or even the denial of a mother's friendly look, her show of sorrow about the child's naughtiness, all these should be enough of a shavit in the right education. Again, he says, al pidarko, with particular attention to the individual traits of the child. It's a very, very important thing, the individual traits of a child. Basically, this requires calmness. Basically, this requires calmness and a seriousness of purpose. Violence should be avoided, as well as excessive indulgence. And this is where mothers mainly go wrong. But really, fathers go wrong too. I don't know why. All right, why he's mentioning mothers? I think he holds that in the earliest years, the influence of the mother is very, very okay, significant. Let me just another thing also. I think I mentioned it last week. We discussed it that. A very important element in training the child, don't lectures never help. Lectures don't help. Telling the child what to do, setting an example in all these things. I mean, if the parents are eating all kinds of foods and they want the child to be only healthy, I mean, it's not going to work. It's going to be very, very difficult. So you've got to lead by example, and whatever you're demanding of the child, obviously if the child goes to bed, it doesn't mean you have to go to bed at 8 o'clock. I mean, that there's certain things the child understands, that he's a child, and the child has to know that they're a child and you're the parent. So obviously, in those types of things. But if you're going to want to restrict the child to only watch a half hour TV or an hour, and you spend hour, well, you're on a Sunday, that's all you do is watch it. All these inconsistencies. You see, there's got to be a consistency factor, and the child has to see that. If the child sees and that everybody does it this way, we're all eating healthy, whatever the case, we all exercise with whatever, that's very, very important. Not to say one thing and to be completely inconsistent, to demand things of the child, but when it comes to you, it's different. That's not going to be an effective thing.
Okay, so the class
we have... He talks every week about not being offended, give it time, and have adults, if you'll follow what I say and work on it, it takes months, it takes years. Anger is a very difficult thing to overcome. And just hearing a lecture and being convinced is not going to do it. It's going to take a long time of really gaining control over your emotions. Children are creatures of emotion. You can't expect them. By giving them a lecture about a topic, that is ineffectual completely. It undermines, they're not ready to hear lectures, it makes them feel that they're bad, they're inadequate. That's not the way to go about it. That is not the way to go about it. That's not the way to treat a kid with excessive anger. We have to try and understand if it's excessive, what's causing the anger, and so on and so forth. But clearly, you go on one time, you give the kid a lecture and that's it, he still has anger, don't worry about it. Very important thing. Don't make the kid feel bad about certain things. If the kid hates his brother, the kid wants to spend... There's not to feel bad about this because those are his feelings. He's a kid. It's not his fault. There's nothing wrong with that. These are natural feelings, but he can't act them out. Okay? So you separate. The best thing is to restrain. Restrain children without lecturing them. Don't make them feel bad about their instincts. They're going to learn to repress their feelings. That's not a good way to go. They're making them feel ashamed of their feelings. Not good. They'll grow. Adults have the same feelings too. Or you've repressed it and you can't acknowledge it. What you try to do is to restrain, separate, so she can't do it, and that's it. She can't do it. You don't have to tell her anything. You don't have to tell her you're bad. You shouldn't do this. You should love your sister. Baloney. She shouldn't love her sister. She should just feel what she feels. But you should restrain the child. That's very important. Whenever she tries to hit, she's restrained. You don't have to punish her. You don't have to hit her. She should be restrained. And she'll see, eventually, that she can't do it. There's a wall.
We don't hit her.